Eric, I fell down three steps this morning.
Oh boy.
I mean, I'm like, how much longer before I have to get one of those necklaces you wear around your neck? You know, I've fallen and I can't get up.
Yeah, probably not much longer. Was it, did you miss a step? Did you lose your
No,
balance?
no,
What?
no. I'm not even going to chalk this one up to age. I was coming outside and it rained a little bit. It's a little slippery, and like the back of my heel like hit the first step and like kind of went out from under me, and so I went like pa bum boom. You know, it wasn't a it was a pa bum
Right.
boom.
I heard a pop-up boom from my house not long ago, and I wasn't sure what it was. Now I know.
That was me.
Welcome once again to Low Rollers. I'm Eric Raskin. I'm joined by my co-host Jeff Edelstein. And we'll have you know that Doge tried to fire us a few days ago, but the next morning they realized just how utterly essential we are. So they immediately rehired us. So bullet dodge there, Low Rollers super fans. You can read us at casinoreports.com, lotterygeeks.com, props.com. You can subscribe to this podcast on all the major podcast apps. And on those apps, please give us a 5-star rating. Jeff, how are you? What's new? Can I assume that because it's above freezing in late February, you are currently podcasting in shorts and sandals?
I am 1,000% in shorts and sandals right now.
Nice.
That's not even a joke. So yeah, I'm ready for spring. I'm actually pretty amazed that you were able to mention anything to do with the current federal administration over there without self-combusting. So good for you.
Yeah, there's definitely an inner rage that maybe didn't quite fully come through in my comment.
At any rate, here we are. We are still employed. Elon can't touch us.
No.
Yeah, and coming up later today, we have an interview with Houston Chronicle investigative reporter Eric Dexheimer, because we're talking about, like, who knew that the Texas Lottery was going to take up so much oxygen in the gambling space this year? But it is. And so we're talking to
Yep.
somebody who knows. Talking to somebody who's on the ground covering it, and he's a great guest. Looking forward to talking to him. But first, as always, Eric, before we get to that, plenty of news to discuss.
Indeed. And before we dive into our main story, you just hinted at it, that the Texas Lottery stuff really is the dominant story in the gambling world this week. So that should be our main story, if not for the fact that we are digging into it with the aforementioned Eric Dexheimer. So there's no need to discuss it here at the start of the show. Instead, let's discuss the news on Tuesday out of New Jersey, where Governor Phil Murphy unveiled his new budget proposal, and it includes raising the tax rate on mobile gaming revenue from 13% and 15% to 25%, so almost doubling it. New Jersey is not the first state to raise its tax rate. Ohio did it and is considering doing it again. Illinois did it. But New Jersey's notable because it's always been the state to point to as the one that's doing online sports betting and online casino right. And that reputation could be in jeopardy. The number of options available to customers could decrease. There are a lot of directions to go with this topic, but Jeff, you live in Jersey. This could impact you as a gambling consumer. What's your reaction to this seemingly somewhat likely tax hike?
I'm going to push back on the somewhat likely.
Okay.
I think it's likely. It's somewhat.
Oh, see,
all right.
Wait,
not going to push back that hard.
I wasn't sure if you were pushing back on the likely or the somewhat.
I'm not sure either. I do know that the casino lobby is second only to teachers, probably in this state. I'd have to think, you know, and they're not going to go quietly into this good night. And there's going to be a fight on this. And I wouldn't be surprised if this 25% doesn't happen. Maybe
okay.
It goes up, you know, maybe they negotiate something where it goes up a little bit here, a little bit there. But I'm hesitant to say that it's going to happen. I've been proven wrong, certainly numerous times in my life. So let's keep that in mind.
Right.
But it seems like, I don't want to say a long shot. I'd bet.
All right. Set some odds. We're a gambling podcast.
Yeah,
give me some odds.
I don't know. I'd say +150. It passes, you know, at 25%. I just think that there's going to be pushback. And again, this is not, you know, this is, you know, the casino lobby in New Jersey, it's not brand new. You know, they've been you know, they've been around since the 70s.
Right.
It's not, you know, it's just not, they're not going to roll over, you know, and they're going to push hard. And, you know, I hate the idea that just because, like, you know, these vices get taxed at a higher rate that you think that you just, like, keep taxing the hell out of them.
Right.
And so, yeah, there's going to be pushback. Already I'm getting, you know, I'm getting the notices from, I got from FanDuel, from MGM, mm-hmm. you know, help, you know, write your congressman, sign this here, you know, fight back. This could, it said this could hurt the consumer. It could hurt their, one of the things that they mentioned, it could limit the promotions we're able to offer.
Right.
Which I am a big fan of promotions.
Those are your lifeblood. Yeah.
It is my lifeblood. So yeah, yeah. I don't know. I'm not sure what's going to happen. I think in all these other states where this has happened, it's kind of been like, yet, like, once they announce it, like, it happens.
Right.
I don't think it's going to happen just like that here. There will be a big fight. And usually when there's a big fight in New Jersey, I feel like this, you know, the quote unquote special interest usually get their piece of flesh.
Right. Or yeah, as you, one of the first things you said there, that it could end up some kind of compromise where it goes up, but not all the way to 25%. I guess it's possible that that's the outcome of this. On principle, I hate this idea that, you know, you pass a bill with certain tax rates and then you can just go in a year later, 2 years later, in New Jersey's case, you know, 7 years later or whatever, but and just change the rates on all these operators who agree. It's less egregious in New Jersey because at least it's been in place for a long time and they're starting from a fairly low point. It was worse, more offensive to me, you know, in Ohio, where everyone agreed to a certain rate and some of the operators wouldn't have entered the state at the higher rate, and then you jack it up on them. But we've seen it fairly clearly that when the tax rates get above a certain level, only the most gigantic operators, you know, FanDuel, DraftKings, to a lesser extent, BetMGM, Caesars, Fanatics, only the big ones can really afford to exist once you get over a certain point. And
right.
So New Jersey has been a state with a really healthy level of competition, what, 20 or so sports books, in part because of that low tax rate. But as more states approach New York level taxes, we're that much more likely to turn the U.S. sports betting ecosystem into a place where there is no lower class or middle class. There may only be a half dozen operators still standing if this keeps up. And it's just, you know, New Jersey is a big tipping point for the whole country because of the way it tends to lead on these things.
Yeah, it's low hanging fruit for the politicians to say, oh, let's tax, you know, let's hit these vices. Let's, you know, I mean, you know, a pack of cigarettes costs like $3,000 here in New Jersey. it's just easy to do this stuff. And right. Like, you know, but it doesn't, who's it? I don't know. Why don't we tax fast food? Why don't we hit McDonald's with
sure.
you know, all their tax rate? I mean,
yeah.
You know, but obviously there'd be a huge outrage to do something like that. So, you know, it's low-hanging fruit. Murphy's going for it. The budget has gone from, like, it's nearly doubled under his 8 years. So there's going to be a lot of pushback. There's going to be a lot
right.
of pushback on this budget, period.
Right.
And so I'm curious to see, if, you know, what happens here.
Right.
But yeah, here's my official bet. It won't be 25%. I'm
okay.
not going to go further than that.
Okay. The sort of related news story this week, although it may not seem obviously related, but it kind of ties in, is that, you know, the harder it gets for operators to be profitable in these regulated channels, the more that you can see them wondering about just becoming exchange operators instead and getting
yeah.
regulated by the CFTC. So that they've been in the news again this week. People can complain all they want about the CFTC basically allowing sports betting and how prediction markets are stealing business away from the regulated operators, stealing revenue away from the states. But I think the New Jersey tax hike and the tax hikes elsewhere all sort of point to there's a case to be made that the states are driving operators away too. It's all intertwined, and it seems increasingly the news is bad for the regulated industry, bad for the operators, just bad all around. And of course, you know, these operators have been willing to tread water in sports betting because of the promise of all the money that they're going to make in online casino,
right.
And then no states are legalizing online casino. So it's yeah, a lot of things at once happening that are not great for all these regulated operators.
Yep. That's very true.
All right. One other topic or group of topics to discuss before our interview segment. There's been a lot of sports betting legislation news this week. We have Missouri's launch being delayed. The goal for some was the summer, but it's looking like fall instead, as the ever-pleasant state senator Denny Hoskins is not making it easy there. A bill was introduced in Maryland to repeal mobile sports betting, making Maryland the second state after Vermont to consider unlegalizing what it recently legalized. There's also another sports betting bill up for consideration in Georgia, plus a bill in Hawaii has now passed in three committees, although nobody actually thinks sports betting has a prayer of being legalized in Hawaii, but who the hell knows? This bill does keep inching forward. So, Jeff, anything you'd like to comment on here?
Not particularly. I mean, this is, the Maryland thing's a joke. Georgia will eventually get its head on straight. Hawaii's not ever going to pass legalized sports betting, and just the fact that Missouri got this bill through, I'm impressed by. So what are they? They'll be ready and they'll be rolling. So I get. I'm so sick. Seriously, I just I the I oh Eric, I've been covering.
Let it out, Jeff. Let it out.
I have met hundreds of politicians in my life. Okay, as a result of like my previous, my jobs and stuff.
Right.
I can count on one hand the number of them that I would consider to be like well thought, well reasoned, head in the right place, willing to listen, people. The rest of them are idiots. And I don't say that term lightly. You
Right.
know, I my favorite story, my favorite like way to compare all this, Arthur C. Clarke, the science fiction writer. I forget which book it was. It might have been Songs from a Distant Earth. I really can't remember. Some far-flung future. There was, the basically every, citizen in the universe had to be put in a lottery. And if your number was called to be dog catcher, well, you were dog catcher for 4 years. If your number was called to be president of the galaxy, well, now you're president of the galaxy for 4 years. It was random draw. That's how we like put people in office. The only people who were banned from the lottery, who were not allowed to hold any positions, when you were young, you would take a test, and if you showed a an aptitude for politics, you were banned from the lottery.
Right. I feel
Right?
like you may have referenced that story in a past podcast when ranting against politicians, but
Well, it's because it's true. I mean, they're all getting into it to try to like go further. So few of them are like actually trying to help. And so it's all special interests. It's all nonsense. And I'm having a lot of trouble getting my thoughts out today. Maybe it's because of the fall. Listen, all these legislatures, how often are they really thinking about the public is really what I'm trying to get at here.
Right. No,
And the answer, in my experience, is hardly ever.
right. Yes.
They're looking
No.
to get reelected and
Exactly.
or move on to the next thing in their career.
Right.
So nonsense. We need a
Well,
benign, I want a benign dictator.
I'd really rather not have a dictator at all, but if we have to have one, sure. So
Benign.
I'll lean benign on the type of dictator I would like. One note back on topic is that I'm only half kidding when I say this, that this has been such a weird year already in gaming that it almost feels appropriate that the only bill that would pass would be Hawaii
Right.
legalizing sports betting. The world is so upside down that would be oddly fitting if that's what were to happen. But
Yes.
as far as these bills to repeal, yeah, I think we agree that these are going nowhere, but the fact that they're even being introduced, what a clear sign that sports betting is losing or has lost the public relations war. That's the big takeaway for me, that
Okay.
these bills may not get very far, but they're indicative of where public sentiment on sports betting lies. And credit to you going back a couple of years, Jeff, when those New York Times hit pieces came out, I remember you correctly identifying how bad it was, the industry losing control of the narrative. It seems that's part of what's led us here.
Oh, we've lost the control of the narrative. But meantime, we're about ready to see the CFTC at some point in the near future, like giving the go ahead for
Right.
these prediction markets. And they're going, I mean, you think they're just going to stick with who's going to win the Super Bowl, right? So like, watching all these bills, it's almost like, what are we even wasting our time for at this point?
Right.
We could wake up in like 6 months' time, this entire industry could be upended. You know, you think Kalshi, if they get the go ahead, they're just they're not going to immediately start putting in player props and, you know, and everything that we're used to. I mean, this industry is in for some pretty shocking changes coming forward.
Yeah. All right. Well, speaking of shocking changes and strange things happening, there have been quite a few of late with the Texas Lottery. So should we move along and talk to our guest about that?
Yeah, the less you hear from me this week, I think the better off we're all going to be.
At this time last week, I wasn't necessarily expecting investigations into the Texas Lottery to be the biggest story in the gambling world. But here we are, and we are very happy to welcome to the podcast the investigative reporter for the Houston Chronicle, who peeled back all the layers of the 2023 Texas Lotto controversy with his reporting last year, and who's now doing it again as another controversy unfolds. Eric Dexheimer, thanks for joining us on Low Rollers.
Great to be here.
So, Eric, from where I sit, it seems what happened with the $95 million jackpot in 2023 was, at the very least, a scheme and quite possibly a full-on scandal, whereas what's happening now with the $83.5 million jackpot won last week is maybe scandalous or maybe just a matter of very bad optics. Based on all of your reporting, what do I have right and what do I have wrong with those characterizations?
Yeah, so there's a couple elements, right? One is whether or not the latest drawing was, as you say, scandalous, or whether it's just politics intruding on, you know, what has always been there. And I think that kind of the courier business in Texas, I can't speak to other states, but it's developed in a way that bingo has, right? So most people who go into a bingo hall now wouldn't really recognize what they think of when they think of bingo, which is like, you know, people calling out numbers, A6, B12, or whatever, and old ladies with daubers in church basements working on cards. It looks a lot more like, you know, a bunch of slot machines, really. And so the courier business has developed in Texas in a way that I think surprised lawmakers. So when this jackpot of $83.5 million was won by a person who bought a ticket through a courier, our Lieutenant Governor, Dan Patrick, who has voiced disapproval of expanding gaming and gambling in Texas, went to pay a visit. And he saw what a modern courier company in Texas looked like, which is kind of a storefront that really has no purpose in this commercial world except to check a bunch of boxes to satisfy Texas laws. And behind that, a bank of lottery terminals processing, you know, lottery tickets frantically for the orders that were placed by the courier company. I haven't seen anything to suggest, as you say, that it's scandalous. You know, the courier company says that the ticket was sold to a Texan who bought $20 worth of tickets over the app. And I think politicians are just kind of shocked at what courier companies look like. And the backdrop to that is that the Texas Lottery Commission has done a very, very poor job of managing their growth here in Texas.
Had you been in one of these storefronts yourself during your reporting over any of this? Like when Dan Patrick went in there with the camera. I think for a lot of us, that was, oh, this is what this looks like. We weren't familiar. Had you seen those firsthand yourself in some of your previous reporting?
I've seen a couple of them. And, you know, to be clear, there are only a handful of big courier companies here. You know, most famously in the lottery I wrote about back in April 2023, the outlet that sold the winning ticket was in a storefront called Hooked on Montana, which purported to sell, I don't know, fishing paraphernalia and help connect people who wanted to book fishing trips in Montana, which I'm not sure that they didn't do that, but I'd be surprised if they did a lot of that. But behind the scenes, there were, you know, more than a dozen terminals churning out tickets for this big draw that, you know, processed 25 million tickets in 72 hours.
The way it seems to be being portrayed, at least by the government officials, is like this is like an outrage in search of a scandal.
Yeah, as I said, it's always particularly, you know, the legislature in Texas meets once every 2 years, right? It's kind of a silly season here. And so it's difficult to know what's going to catch their attention. And for some reason, this did. And you're right that the scandal of the drawing that happened last week, I think, is that Texas politicians got a good look at how big courier operations had gotten here. And, you know, the kind of the backdrop to that is the Texas Lottery Commission is going through its once every 10-year audit by what's called the Sunset Review. And so what that means is that the Sunset Committee does a deep dive into their operations, and the legislature has to affirmatively vote to give them money the next year and continue their operations. And the Sunset reviewers kind of noted that these couriers had gotten a big foothold in Texas. They had grown, and that the largest selling outlets in the state were owned by courier companies. And yet, the Texas Lottery Commission hadn't really kind of gotten a hold of them in a regulatory way. Like, they hadn't said, yeah, these guys can exist. No, they can't exist. Yes, they should be regulated. The position of the agency has always been they're outside our jurisdiction, so we have nothing to do with them. And I think that kind of the what that has come to look like has alarmed Texas politicians. But again, there's always, you know, there's always this backdrop of just the politics. And Texas is an anti-gaming state, right? We're surrounded by legalized gaming in Mexico and New Mexico and Oklahoma, and you know, Texas is firmly kind of resisted that.
You know, I'm familiar with the lieutenant governor as a result of like his anti-gambling stance. Is this what he did the other day? Is that out of character for him to put on his Superman cape and launch his own investigations and hit the road, or is that something that he's done before?
I don't know if he's done that before, but you, as you probably know, Lieutenant Governor has a background of being a radio talk show host. So he has got kind of this history of understanding the power of media and kind of performative politics. So I have no doubt that this was done deliberately, and you know, he kind of chose his spot, and it resonated. And it's since kind of released this, you know, pent up anti-gaming energy amongst the legislature, and there have been calls for the Texas Rangers to investigate. A couple of days ago, the governor, Greg Abbott, called for a Texas Rangers investigation of these two jackpot wins, the one I wrote about and the one last week. And then yesterday, Dan Patrick kind of upped it a little bit, and he called for the Rangers to investigate everything about couriers back until, you know, 2016 when they first started appearing in the state.
And the one from 23 that appears on the surface to be like the jackpot got big enough that somebody with deep pockets figured buy up all the numbers.
Yeah, I think what happened there is pretty clear based on my reporting that, yeah, the jackpot had gotten to $95 million. Lotto Texas is a game which relatively few people play. And so the odds both are, you know, the mathematics of winning a jackpot at a cost of $25 million, which represents all the numeric combinations, versus the odds of having to share that, which were very small because of the relatively small number of players, meant that it was ripe for someone who, you know, saw an advantage to buying up the entire draw.
And now they're looking to see if that's scandalous in its own way.
Okay, I think what, you know, what's scandalous about that is kind of the complicity of the Texas Lottery Commission, which had to have known what was happening. They received these very odd requests for additional terminals to these outlets that had barely sold any tickets over the last year. They looked the other way, you know, with regard to their own rules of what a retail store had to look like. So I think it wasn't that some mathematician or somebody with $25 million saw an opportunity. It was that the Texas Lottery Commission, whose job is to ensure fairness, kind of assisted in this operation that really put your regular lottery player at a huge disadvantage.
Right. The question that I know no journalist likes answering, but if you had to put on your wizard's hat here, where does this all look like on June 3rd or whenever the lawmaker session's all over?
Well, right now it seems like the momentum is to ban couriers. There's been a bill introduced to ban them, but preempting that, the Lottery Commission, kind of reversing its position of the past almost 10 years, said, actually, we're going to ban them now. You know, they had said previously that they were hands off. The couriers have formed a coalition, hastily formed coalition, hired some lobbyists, and, you know, requested that they be regulated, kind of a time-honored tradition for industries that are controversial. And so Right now, it looks like the momentum is to ban them, but nobody made money guessing what the Texas legislature was going to do.
And then I guess more further reaching than just the lottery, you talked at the beginning about how the lieutenant governor is anti-gambling and it's somewhat of an anti-gambling state. Is all of this very public lottery controversy likely to doom any hopes of legalizing sports betting, casinos, et cetera, in Texas in the near future?
Let me first stipulate, I don't know a ton about kind of the efforts to bring casinos and legalize gambling here. But what I've heard legislators say, and what I intuit, is that a gaming scandal does nothing to help bring legalized gambling here, right? And that every 2 years, gaming interests, marshal a team or an army of lobbyists. They spend millions of dollars and they try to move the ball forward in terms of getting, a foothold. I know some gambling interests have purchased, say, old dog track licenses, right, in the hopes that Texas will legalize gaming, and they have already a site in place to place a casino. But, from everything I've been hearing, having a giant gambling scandal in front of them does the gaming interest no favors here.
And does there seem to be a serious possibility that Texas could actually even repeal its lottery law? I know I've sort of seen that floated. It's the, for now they're just shutting down the couriers, but is there any chance that Texas ceases to be a legal lottery state at some point soon?
I mean, it's kind of a game of chicken, right? That the lottery produces about $1.5 to $2 billion a year, which goes primarily to Texas schools. A little bit goes to veterans. And, politicians don't like to give up that revenue, particularly in a state that underfunds education anyway, right? So they would have to make up that money from someplace. And I think they're reluctant to do that. So it's, there's this, there's a lot of, voice being given to the politicians' anger at the way the lottery is working, but whether or not they actually pull the plug on a industry that gives a lot of money to schools and fills a big hole in the budget, I guess I would be surprised if they actually went that far.
All right. So the last thing I want to ask you, I don't know if Jeff may have anything else, but just as a journalist, I'm sort of, we're all writers, reporters here. I'm curious, just, coming at it from your investigative journalist, you mostly cover politics, criminal justice. Did you ever imagine lottery was going to become such a big part of your beat? And how have you enjoyed covering it compared to a lot of the other tracks that you're usually on?
I actually have covered the lottery previously
Okay.
and bingo before that. I mean, they're both kind of unusual, off the beaten path subjects that, as a journalist, I always like to go where other people aren't. And, they're both this very kind of cash rich, loosely regulated, under the radar business that, I don't know, has a lot of opportunity for shenanigans. And as you probably know, there have been a handful of lottery scandals in the past. There was one just in Iowa that had a Texas connection, where I think there was a guy who was a brother of like a justice of the peace in East Texas, was an IT executive for the Iowa lottery and figured out how to game that. So there are always these kind of intriguing tales of skullduggery with the lottery out there as people try to, beat the system, and they make for fascinating stories. I don't know, it's been fun covering it. But no, to answer your question, I did not think, and I don't think anybody thought, that the Texas Lottery Commission was going to be the subject of this kind of journalistic riot.
Right. But basically anywhere though that leads to the potential for skullduggery and reporting on skullduggery is appealing to you.
Anytime you can get skullduggery or shenanigans or hoopla or fol-de-rol into your work, absolutely something you want to pursue.
Excellent. All right. Well, thanks so much for joining us on the podcast here, Eric, and discussing this situation with us. I'm not sure whether to call it a scandal or just a situation, but there may be some skullduggery afoot, and you'll continue to report on it. Everyone can read you in the Houston Chronicle. Thanks so much for coming on Low Rollers.
Well, I appreciate you having me.
Okay, our thanks again to Eric. That's 2 weeks in a row of us making new friends. And speaking of friends, my kids like to joke that I have no friends, and like any good joke, it's rooted in truth. But this past Saturday, it almost appeared as if I had friends, as I had no fewer than four fellow middle-aged and up males over to my house to watch a day of pay-per-view boxing, and you were one of them, Jeff.
I was.
And there is a betting tie-in here to me bringing this up. There were seven fights, so I made a seven-leg winner parlay, mostly for the sweat, not because I really thought I had any kind of edge. I bet $2 at 42-1, just to make things a little more interesting, and I was still alive through five legs. I had four wins and one voided leg on a lucky draw, but I ultimately fell short on the sixth leg, which means I fell one leg short of being able to consider hedging to lock in a win, and I probably would have hedged, even though I know that's not the right thing to do. Any sharp bettor will tell you, instead of hedging six legs into a seven-leg parlay, you really should be betting a six-leg parlay. And to that I say, fine, but if I'm betting a six-leg parlay, that just means I'm looking to hedge after the fifth leg. what can I tell you, Jeff? I am a low roller. But anyway, it was nice seeing you on Saturday. Thanks for pretending to be my friend in front of my wife and kids. I appreciate it.
No, yeah, just send me that $25 PayPal thing, and we're clean.
Yeah.
No, it was fun. It's good. The bottom line is that, and this, it's like a real thing. It's hard for, especially like in this world now where everything is, you know, our whole lives are like on our phones and inside, and there's no workplace. You know, it's hard for middle-aged men to make friends. It really is. It's hard to make new friends. You know.
Right.
So that's it. So it was nice to get out of the house. First time I've been out of the house since pre-COVID, and it was nice.
That may be a slight exaggeration. I've seen you at my local delicatessen at least two or three times since pre-COVID.
Which, by the way, they opened up a little satellite over here at the Trenton Farmers Market.
Oh, I didn't know that. All right, maybe next time I'm coming to you.
There you go. All right, listen, Sunday night is the Oscars, and I have all of $10 bet on the Oscars this year. This makes me very sad because in years past, man, I had thousands of dollars on the Oscars, and I cleaned up. And the reason is because all the sports books in New Jersey here would list the Oscar markets like months ahead of time. DraftKings, FanDuel, Caesars, PointsBet was great. In PointsBet, they were days behind the odds changes. It was awesome. I had a smorgasbord of bets across every market. I had every picture for the best Oscars. I would bet 100 to 1, 20 to 1, 30 to 1, 40, you know, and then one would win an award and I'd be cleaning up. I was set. I'd go into Oscar night with guaranteed money, you know. I'd have guaranteed money booked everywhere. Would I win 300 or would I win 3,000? Who knew? Who cared? Didn't matter. I was going to win. I had Coda at like 25 to 1. I had everything everywhere at like 15 to 1. It was glorious. This year, the only book that posted early odds was DraftKings. PointsBet no longer exists. FanDuel just got around to posting the Oscars. I haven't even looked at the other ones because it doesn't matter because everything is baked in right now. Mm-hmm. And even at DraftKings, I couldn't even like take advantage of their early markets because I'm limited literally to pennies. That I know what the word literally means and I know what the word pennies mean. And I'm limited to pennies. And on top of it, they won't even let me bet 8 cents on this picture to win Best Picture and another 8 cents on another picture. Once I bet one market, I was banned from betting another market. This makes me sad. As a result, I'm not even going to watch the Oscars this year. For the last few years, it's been very exciting for me to sit down and watch the Oscars and win money. Now I have no interest. I don't care. I guess Timothy Chalamet, I want him to win Best Actor. I can turn my 8 cents into 22 cents. Eric.
Yes.
I have nothing else to say.
Okay.
We are low rollers. And you know what we do?
Tell me.
Small stakes, hot takes. See you next week.